And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to David Shedd, Coach's Corner. We will have that program every month, fourth Tuesday of the month between 2 and 3. But now, one of my favorite shows of all time, we have the real estate panel. And I'll tell you, real estate is like everywhere, of course. And with the debt ceiling, the political ramifications, I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe we're going to be repossessed. It won't be a house-by-house repossession. It will be the country repossession. Terry Cass, welcome. Chris Gray, and we'll get to your special guest in a second. And what do you say? I know you're very political. It's a mess. Come on. You can say it. It's getting discouraging out there, right?
We're
good friends.
This
We've
is
been
kind
friends
of a Christian-based radio station,
oh, yeah, you
right?
can't cuss, but...
No, well, let me put it this way. I tell all my liberal friends, if I had the choice between Barack Obama and Satan, the devil, I would vote for the devil because I know at least what he stands for.
I forgot. That's one thing you can't say on the show. Did that get through?
So I'm that is kidding. The end of my discussion politically.
Chris Gray, what did I do? I didn't expect that one. I thought it was... Chris.
That was a big bite.
Yeah, that was. Well, welcome, Chris Gray, too.
Hey, thanks,
how are you going to match that one?
You know, I'm not big into politics. I'm big into lending, and lending's still out there, and we're doing a lot of loans. There's still a lot of people buying a lot of houses, and we were thinking we're going to chat a little bit about that today on what people can be buying and how they can get financed and things like that.
That will be important. Of course, you will be big in politics next Monday, right?
Yes,
what do we got?
I
Let's
will.
Do a little plug for your show. What's Up Phoenix starring Chris Gray? What do we got?
Okay, so my August 1st show, What's Up Phoenix, we're going to have some of the mayoral candidates here on the show. And let's see, we're going to have Miss Jennifer Wright, Mr. Claude Maddox, and Miss Peggy Neely. Three of the mayoral candidates here chatting, and it's going to be from 2:30 to 4 on here on 1010. And we're also going to have Mr. Don Goldwater in the house.
Oh, cool.
Yes. I figured it'd be fun to have our friend Don.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I always like him when he's on the show.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I like him when he's not on the show, too. What can I say? That was sounded sort of funny. Anyway, okay, well... Of course, a real estate panel, a panel of experts. Of course, we got Chris Gray from American Financial Lending, Terry Cass from Cast and Long Commercial Group. We got some really great talent, and between both of you, you really know the market. Really, the advice will be flying today, and hopefully we will really have a fun time. We usually do. We want to talk about your hawk attack.
Well, that was pretty interesting.
I think you should.
Nobody believes me because I don't have a picture, but when you're being attacked by whatever it was, I was told by my partner it's not a hawk, but when a foot and a half tall bird with talons comes flying at your head, I don't really care what it was. Five times in a row trying to get my little dog.
That's incredible, really, yeah. If you think about it.
Second time that happened.
What would he could you think that bird could have picked up the dog?
Oh, easily.
Really?
Yeah. What would dog's pretty mean, so.
What would it do with the dog? Does it actually eat a dog?
That's the dog's what 15 pounds? Oh. I would assume what?
Yeah, birds.
Big
definitely.
Rabbit?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Big rabbit? Yeah.
Sure, those are definitely prey. I mean, people continually say, you know, for the folks that live like back up to a reserve, you know, you don't want to leave your little animals out because they will not be there.
Now, I don't know if he was going after me because I was in his nesting area. I mean, we had some really huge trees in the park behind us. Or, like I said, he veered away every time, and then he would nest. He would perch, then he would come at me again, and he would perch. And I finally said to my dog, we're out of here. And then the next time I walked him, I brought a semi-weapon with just in case. Like a big, you know, a walking
stick. And then the third
stick.
Time, he brought someone else's dog.
So there you go.
Be careful eating.
Are you allowed to shoot one of those things?
No, it was just like a walking stick just in case it didn't veer away.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's pretty large talons on those things.
We could have seen you in the news.
Yeah, right.
Realtor.
You know what?
Flying through there.
There was a woman that was recently mauled by a bear.
Oh, well, that's
I heard that.
Yeah.
That where, was, is, where was
and
that?
And she... God rest her soul, has passed away from that.
So
that
sorry.
Was about a month ago.
I did hear that. No, she died, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's That is unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, bears, wow.
So animals, I mean, that's what they are. They're wild animals.
Yeah.
Are we talking this everything but real estate
yeah.
today?
I like this. This is like the boys around the party, you know, like the
well, and I was gonna
fireside
say,
chat.
It reminds me, who's that crocodile guy, you know, that Steve Irwin.
Oh, my you gosh. Know? What I a mean, horrible yeah, thing that was.
I mean, that guy all but lived with animals, and he, you know, was subject to, you know, the wildlife. It's what they are, wildlife.
Yeah.
But, hey, I wanted to introduce sure. my special guest, George Grousso. He's a financial planner here in Phoenix. And, George, welcome to our real estate panel.
Thank you very much. Since we're talking about real estate today, so if I
well,
have
no,
to...
we're not yet.
We're not yet. I was going to...
What's your opinion on the bear, Molly?
Well, yeah. I'm thinking anytime you have to walk your dog and carry a firearm strapped to your hip, is that still considered a rural area of Arizona?
Firearm.
Or is that local
and you know where
now?
This was? This was in the middle of Scottsdale.
Carries oh, my a gosh. Cattle prod. Yeah.
That's incredible. So good point, George. Wow, I haven't seen you for a while. You were actually on our July 4th special edition show.
Yes, I was, and I wanted to thank you all again for having me. That was one of the best times I've had in quite a while. I really enjoyed it, and a lot of my family and friends really enjoyed the show as well.
Oh, so. Excellent. You were great, though.
Oh, thank you.
That was the first time I found out you were a Marine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we hadn't talked about that in the past.
I didn't know. I was about to take in 10 rounds until I found out, and you would take me in 10 seconds. I was going to send in a you know someone else for that one. But real estate is, you know, what can you say about real estate? I don't know where you want to start. I guess the topic can be, you know, financial planning in real estate and the pulse of the market. You want to start, Terry, where do you want to start?
Well, we can start with financing. We were talking outside that I am doing a lot more deals with loans, which is good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, a lot of my duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, actually the majority that I think I have 12 escrows going, and I bet over half of them are involved
financed.
With loans.
Financed,
that's,
right.
Yeah, which is usually it'd be a 12 out of 12 cash a right. year ago.
Interesting.
Yeah, it brings more business to, you know, to the community.
Well, they're trying to leverage now, and the banks are becoming more reasonable. The appraisers are still challenging, but better.
And there are some new laws coming out again with appraisals this September
to
help things.
But, yeah, if you're an investor, it's possible much easier to get financing than it was. And what are we looking, 25% down on a investment fourplex?
Typically 20 to 25%, 20
really.
Minimum.
Well, if you're saying 20, that's good because I thought it was 25
right. no,
worst
you can,
case.
Yeah, you know. Pricing and things like that on rates are a skosh more, you know, but 20% down investment property.
And low interest rates.
Right.
In the fives?
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So what's creating this? Why is it a little bit more flexible? What's your opinion on this?
They're figuring it out. You know, lenders are starting to figure it out a little bit on how they want to lend, and they're finally getting some of the rules, you know, because initially it was like, all right, well, let's toss these rules out there, and people have to qualify this way. And, oh, wait a minute, that didn't work real good. Let's add a couple of these rules and – oops, wait a minute. All right, so we got to tweak those. And if you're a realtor, or actually even if you're an investor or a buyer, you know that in the last couple of years, if you've bought more than one home, you've seen that, well, wait a minute, I didn't provide all that stuff the last time or everything I provide. You know, I also, every time you did a loan, it was something added in it. You know, there's still a lot of stuff you have to get, but it's just dotting the I's and crossing the T's. They want to just really be sure you are who you say and you have what you say, and it's, you know, kind of covering their butts. They'll give you the money if you actually can pay it back, you can get a loan.
So, like the good old days, sort of.
Exactly.
Before the better old days,
like
yes.
And
go ahead, George.
I was going to ask, since we're discussing the loan process, are you finding with the changes in the real estate market that more of the people are getting into real estate investment for the first time, or are you having a recurrence of savvy, knowledgeable investors that have been doing this for quite a few years that are doing this? And how are you approaching this with the people that are doing this and getting involved in it for the first time?
That'd be me. But no, both. The savvy guys are definitely back. The guys that were sitting out on the sidelines where the prices were pathetically high and negative cash flow. They're back with a vengeance. Mm-hmm. But then there's just the ones that got burned, they're all out, and they're being replaced with new buyers. So I'm seeing tons of new buyers coming from all over the country, even areas that don't normally come into Phoenix, from the East Coast, from the Midwest. Usually it's California. Canadians are all over this place right now.
You know, and there's and it's bringing them out of the woodwork because there is a lot of money to be made in real estate again.
Absolutely.
I mean, some of the houses that you know need some fixing, and you know the fix and flip or how, what, you know, the old saying. But you know, I mean, I have loans right now where people are buying them as a primary residence that an investor is selling, where an investor paid a, you know, whatever dollar amount, put, you know, 10 or 20 grand in it, depending on, you know, the property, and then is selling it and making a profit. And everybody's happy. The person buying it now has to do nothing but move in.
And affordable.
And it's affordable.
And the investor makes a nice return.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody, you're right. It is perfect.
So many homes are $700-$800 a month. I mean, it's astronomical. I mean, you know, and then I'm talking to a neighbor the other day. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to rent my house for about $1,300 a month. And so it's kind of a renter's market because of all the tragedy, you know, in the economy. But so, therefore, if you're an investor and thinking of buying, I mean, there's never a better time, because if you're going to rent it or you're going to fix and flip it, there's money for everybody, and it's a win-win for everybody involved in the transaction.
Yeah, and I don't think this market's going to last long. I'll be honest, if we were talking in our meeting this morning, I think the window's starting to
supply is dwindling quite a bit.
Supply has dwindled considerably.
And everybody's trying to figure out where are these ghost or shadow properties.
And you know what? Everybody says it, and we're not seeing them.
Right.
I'm not saying they're not there.
Never.
But on MLS, I think we're at one of the lowest rates we've ever been at. Mm-hmm. We're almost at equilibrium, meaning the same before we were way up on supply.
And having and now being at that low, we're also the highest we've been in a long time on loan applications. So a lot more people are buying homes right now. Yeah. And, you know, so the supply is dwindling.
Foreclosure, the amount of foreclosures
is
decreasing.
Yeah.
I think ASU said the fourth month in a row it's gone down.
Right. Wow, it sounds like we're trying to say maybe it's turning around.
Yeah.
That would be great. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the real estate panel, Terry Cass, Chris Gray, and special in-studio guest, George Grasso, and we'll be right back.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel starring Chris Gray. Do you like how that sounds?
I don't know about starring, but I'm definitely here.
Yeah, I like starring.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a good time.
We have Terry Cass in the house and, of course, a commercial real estate broker. And special in-studio guest is George Grauzo. And did I say that right?
Yes, you did. That sounded good.
I'm doing pretty good on this, Chris. I know you're amazed. You know I can't chew gum and rub my head at the same time.
That's all right. The last time we were here,
carry a dog and avoid a hawk at the same time.
There you go.
Maybe. Probably not. It'll sound like you did pretty good, too, Terry. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Let's before we get to a couple questions for George, I'm just curious. It's not political. It has to do with finances. You hear all this talk. I mean, right, wrong, Democrat, Republican, whatever. The reality is, if the debt ceiling is not raised, you hear all this talk that the credit rating goes down and higher interest rates. Number one, is that true? And how would that affect everyone in this room?
Oh, it's over. I mean,
higher interest rates.
Yeah, what are we talking about? Higher interest rates? Higher interest rates, 5.5 instead of 4.5? Or I mean,
I'm not sure. They didn't say, but I've been
to a couple of different meetings recently with some politicians and whatnot, and they're talking about things like there are so many different scare tactic phrases people say, you know, like with the debt ceiling, and if this happens, then rates will skyrocket. And, you know, it's been, you know, for the last several years, it's all been wait and see. And, you know, nothing has really crumbled all in one day to end all of life. So, I mean, I don't think August 1st or 3rd or any
second
of that will end all of life.
You almost had it as August 2nd. Well, but like you were close. All right, George, it looked like you had a comment on
this. Yeah, as far as the raising of the debt ceiling, if they don't do that and we wind up going into some type of default, then they're going to lower our credit score on the world scale. One of the things that when you're looking from an economic standpoint is what happens to our buying power as a nation or our commodities and how we do trade with other nations. How that affects us is from a standpoint of weakening our dollar. Right now, our dollar is worth less than a euro. It's not a one-to-one. So if this was to happen, it destroys our credibility. And, you know, without credibility, you really have less value. And by doing that, the dollar would weaken even more. Then you're talking about the inflationary aspect of it, which generates what? Higher prices. So because we're a nation of importers and consumers now rather than exporters, this could have a real serious effect on not just your paycheck, but how you put food on the table.
Right. We're already seeing higher prices at the grocery store. I mean, that's been for a while. You know, and then the other thing you have to keep in mind, too, is, yeah, you don't want to get a poor credit rating, but, you know, we're so deep in China's pockets now that, what are they? Are you going to cut us off? Okay, no. I mean, it's a lot more to it than just poor credit rating.
Being the political guy, I'd like to add one little aspect.
No devil jokes again.
So it's my turn.
I brought it up where I was first, and it wasn't. It was just, never mind. The Moody's are not focusing on the debt ceiling. They're focusing on that we are in too much debt. People I don't like in office are not saying that. We are too much in debt. It's not whether we raise the debt ceiling or not. If we raise the debt ceiling, they can still downgrade us because we owe too much and we can't pay it. It's, again, maybe I sound, you know, typical, but it's not that we don't bring enough money in. It's these challenging political people in Washington can't keep spending too much. That's the problem. We all make a living. It only becomes a problem is when we spend more than we make, correct?
Right.
If you spend what you make in salary, everything's cool. These guys can't keep it in range. So even if they raise the debt ceiling $2.5 trillion and we hit it and now we're $2.5 higher and they don't stop spending, Moody's is going to downgrade us, guys. I think you're really focusing on the wrong thing.
Well, it's a good point, George.
It's a matter of by raising the debt ceiling, they prevent going into default.
I understand
that. By not raising that, they go into default.
But it doesn't mean Moody's won't downgrade us because if we keep spending, we're going to have too much debt.
No, it's like when you overextend on your credit card, as long as you don't hit the ceiling, then the credit card company says, okay, you're fine. But if you overextend on your credit card, then they hit you with it. Well, that's what Moody's is going to do.
What about perception? We'll just end up like Greece.
Perception is reality.
Well, right. But if the perception is we have too much debt, but right. That is still going to cause a problem. And the perception is we have too much debt.
Right. Chris, the FICO score. I mean, if you have too much debt, it does go down, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just
and that's a credit
say.
Rating. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Right. I'm not saying we shouldn't raise the debt ceiling. Yeah. I don't agree with it. To me, that's stupid. If you're already over your credit card, you call them up and go, look, I need to spend more, raise my credit limit. I'm sure the credit card company is going to go, oh, yeah, no problem, Mr. Cass. They're going to look at me like I'm an idiot.
So I have a quick question for you then. In regards to that and how you seem to be very passionate about this.
Welcome to Point Counterpoint.
It's because you got attacked by a bird. I became very passionate after that.
No.
do you appreciate the fact or does it make you feel better that they've changed, we need to raise taxes to, we need to increase revenue? How do you feel about that when the government comes out and says
as a normal consumer, if I hit my credit limit, I have one alternative.
Increase
as a normal
your debt
person.
Ceiling.
No. The credit card companies go, Mr. Cass, cut your spending down.
Right.
Start cutting out things,
yeah, they
which
cut it
normal
down for
Americans
you.
Do.
They
the
cut
only
it down for you.
People that think it's okay is to raise your debt limit. Now, if I'm in the situation, do you think it's better? APS calls, oh, Mr. Cass, we notice we can't pay your electric bill. We'll raise it. No problem. We'll just raise it on you. Yeah. That's what you're asking. Yeah. I can't afford. I've hit my credit limit. I can't afford to live. And now you want to raise my taxes?
I never said it was a
taxes?
Good idea.
It's an atrocious idea. If I can't pay what I already owe now, what good is increasing my expenses?
Exactly.
Again, you got to cut out your expenses.
Why have a budget if you can't stay in it?
Right.
As far
but
as
if
what you're we're
if
talking
the
about
budget's
here.
Too high, cut your expenses.
Exactly. You know what we could
if
do.
I can't go to the movie every night, I can't go to eat every night, I can't buy the new car I wanted.
We could Sorry, allow guys. The government to do a stated income loan.
I don't want to give them any more money.
A life doc loan.
I don't, I'm,
Sounds
I'm sorry,
familiar.
Yeah.
No income verification.
I don't think they should. I'm not agreeing.
What's
they should raise
FICO
the debt
now?
Limit. The government?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it's at least a 400.
Well, that brings up a good point. If they're talking about raising our taxes from a standpoint of generating additional,
excuse me, you
tax.
Can't say taxes.
Oh yes,
revenue.
Yeah.
Don't even talk about. They're not raising our taxes.
Let's look at it from this standpoint. We've got professionals in the room here that know that there's opportunities out there in real estate. What better than to kind of maybe take advantage of putting some of your money aside at a unrealized gain, and there's also the potential of unrealized loss into the real estate, but also looking at it from a standpoint of tax deferral when you're talking about financial planning. You can balance everything that you're doing based on what you're looking to accomplish from either a real estate point or a financial planning point.
Oh yeah, you can
prevent the government from increasing that additional revenue on some of the money that you're trying to save for later on in life.
Like so retirement. George is talking about real estate again.
Well, I was listening to Bloomberg this morning on the way in, and they were saying what investments are good if they don't raise the debt limit. You know what their answer was?
Let me guess.
No.
Okay.
Pick good companies that pay good dividends, solid companies. GE, McDonald's, a couple others that pay good dividends, that have good debt ratios, that have a lot of cash on hand, that have a solid record of paying dividends. They said if we were you, that's where we would do it. Now, that makes sense to me. On the other avenue, if we're going to go into an inflationary period, like you said, then what do you invest in? Ground, real estate. Yeah. Right. If it's going to go up, that you want to, gold, things that, you know, my theories of the
ground, G's. Ground, gold. What were the four again? Ground, gold, guns.
In God.
Marijuana.
Yeah. In God.
No, marijuana is M.
Oh.
That would be ground. No, that's ground.
But I was thinking
good ground.
Yeah, I was thinking our Mr. Terry.
Oh, the dispensaries. Right. Let's not get into that discussion.
Oh, I love that one. Wait a second. Would that be considered commercial real estate property now at this point? Or?
Yeah, that would be. But
you know. George. No, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, you did. I was just going to say you did like the Rotary.
That was very informative.
You were there, Chris.
Yeah,
right? That was very good.
That was.
Are you going Friday? The mayors are going to be there.
Yes.
We're going to talk
to
them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
You going to go?
I might.
Okay.
But, I mean, in terms of financial planning, again, I'm in real estate, but any investment portfolio, to me, to be stable, would include some facet of real estate. You know, stocks, bonds, real estate, annuities. And go down your list.
But, well, George.
good insurance, disability. Uh-huh. I'm getting older. I just signed up for long-term health insurance.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I want to protect, in case something happens. I'm at an age where,
something called
where was George when you needed him?
What?
Where was George when you needed him?
Yeah, you should have called him.
Sorry, I just met George, and I already got a financial plan I've been dealing with for a long time. So.
Good point.
So, that's a very good point.
But it's a good thing. I knew I needed it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Perfect example. I'm not saying you have to do it with one particular person, but talk to somebody that you trust.
Yeah.
Talk to a financial advisor that you've built and established a rapport and relationship with, and make sure you utilize the talent that's there to decide what is best for you. I mean, everybody, it's like a fingerprint. Everybody's portfolio, everybody's plan is going to be different. But to take action and to sit down and talk to someone that's in my profession is never a detriment. You'll always learn something,
absolutely.
And they'll always learn from you. So take advantage of that opportunity.
Have a plan.
I love
Have
it.
A plan. Yes.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the real estate panel that turned a little political. I actually loved it. This was like point, counterpoint. Kurt, you liked it too. And we'll be back with Terry Cass, Chris Gray, and George Grousel in a moment.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel, plus steroids on political matters. We are really rolling today. I love it. And I don't know. We're a little bit. How would you describe it, Chris? Today
We're off off context.
No, I think it's right on.
I have something for Chris. Political.
Oh, good. Now we're talking.
Mr. Dodd is trying to pass a law that's going to outlaw seller financing. It's true. It's in I think he's a senator. I'm not sure. House. Because he feels that it should best be handled by the so-called professional mortgage people to qualify buyers as to are they qualified to get a loan. And these are the same people that screwed up our system over the last 4 years. We were arguing this morning. Did you hear about that? That is a law. I mean, he's trying.
Right, a little bit. And it's, you know, and that goes right along with they want the government to control because, as you know, the government, the feds have bailed out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So we're on a shoestring with that. You know, it's really, do Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac really set the rules, or do the feds set the rules, or are people or are lenders actually afraid to even lend Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are taking so long to buy loans? And so anyway, but it goes right along with them wanting to run all of it. For instance, you know, all the laws that just changed with how loan officers are paid, how mortgage companies are paid, and how everybody is paid in that transaction. You can't actually be paid from a transaction. You have to be paid salary, yada, yada, on and on. They don't want anybody to make any money from anything unless they say you can make money.
Is that what it leads to? You think?
Yeah.
If it does, I don't think it will pass, but if it does, I don't think it'll kill the real estate industry. I'm not seeing that much seller financing.
You know,
there's no equity.
Probably right along in with that seller financing, they're talking about private money lenders. Whereas right now, there's a
lot
of. Well, I mean,
you're right.
You know, and because they are under fire, the private money lenders are under fire big time because there's some loopholes where they're getting away with things kind of that, you know, you're like me, a type of banker, broker can't do because my hands are tied because of my licensing and this and that. And, you know, I don't think we should get rid of the private sector because, you know what? I mean, I was giving classes on Saturday for a while where 36 to 40 investors would show up every Saturday. And those people were pretty much almost all – half of them were using private money. The other half were writing checks. So, okay, so now you want to get rid of all that too? I mean, that's tough. I'm not for any more regulation. Let's back up a minute and watch and see how all this pans out because right now it's really not doing all that good.
Yeah, I'm not – we're trying to fight. I know the real estate industry is trying to fight it big time.
Right. Well, the financial industry is fighting a lot of that, too. There's a lot of stipulations in that bill as well that are referring to, depending on what your income level is, what you're allowed to invest in financially.
Wow.
A lot of people aren't aware of that. And I don't want to get into specifics because I don't have the actual page numbers, but there's several parts of that document that refer to what you can and can't invest your hard-earned money into. And that we need to take a look at very hard.
Kind of like owning a bar, paying about $5 million for a bar, and then 6 months later they pass a law that says, gee, Terry, I know you paid $5 million to own that bar, but you can't let people smoke in it. I don't care if you own it or not.
All right.
You know, it's just one more little tidbit they keep taking from people. And if we just keep letting them take, I mean – okay, if you're not a helmet wearer, then, you know, okay, then that's your problem. If you're not a seatbelt wearer, it's just all the little things. You know, you could go on forever with
See,
that.
See, Terry, you drew out the political stuff in them. I knew you could do it. That was very good. Now, let's talk a little bit more about real estate and availability. What's going on in the availability of the market, Terry?
Well, like I was saying, and I'm MLS, the amount of homes for sale has gone down drastically. The amount of foreclosures and short sales is down. In terms of fourplexes, we're down to 106 listings. I checked over the weekend. That was up to over 225 a year or two ago. Mm. So that's starting to go down, and prices are definitely eking up. I mean, I think half the prices are probably over 100,000, 100 and a quarter, where it used to be three quarters would be under 100,000. Yeah, and then we wanted to bring up shadow inventory, the old we were discussing. You know, everybody says there's shadow inventory, but nobody could prove it.
Right.
And if that's true, if it is true, that is going to have a drastic effect on pricing in the market.
I've had asset managers tell me, you know, that the big asset managers tell me that, you know, like there's about 59,000 vacant properties in Maricopa County. That's the shadow. But again, like Terry's saying, you know, people have been saying this for a couple of years. It's been growing and growing. And, you know, I kindly get it. It's hard for you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and HUD and everybody that has all these vacant properties to figure out how they're going to release them to the market in some sort of trickle effect so that it doesn't crash the market. Because then the other thing you have are home buyers that, you know, they walk in a property and go, oh, this one doesn't have the brown tile like I like. Let's move to the next one. You know, and everybody gets really, really picky. People forget that they can paint something or tile something. And when you're buying a house at $70,000 that sold for $240,000, you know, in a good market, you know, not in an insanity, just in a normal market, sold for $200,000, we'll say. I mean, you know, so they just can't figure out how to bring them to the market. But what I wanted to ask was George, how, you know, can you tell people if you feel, what do you think about adding a property to your investment portfolio? Being a financial planner, would you say people should have real estate in their portfolio?
I would say that would be up to the individual, and it would always be important to review what you're currently doing for your goals and your planning for the future. Anything that could generate passive income, I don't think anybody would disagree, is a great thing to have, especially if you're able to have investments in real estate and have rental properties or apartment complexes that you can generate revenue for yourself and your family. The idea behind that is, what do you do with it then? We talked about spending. Why not take that passive income and put it into some type of vehicle that's going to help you save for the future, living more within your means and taking that additional revenue and investing into your future as far as a portfolio, like either a retirement type of plan, or what if we talked about, you know, you brought up disability too, and it was a matter of putting these into the plans that are going to be helping you down the road so you don't have to liquidate those assets to afford long-term care or to protect your income. It takes a small portion to protect a large portion. And I think with sitting down with a financial advisor and going through what your goals are, if your goal is to have a substantial amount of your investments in real estate, let's take a look at how to make sure that's protected for the well-being of your family. If you want to diversify your portfolio, then let's come up with a strategy that's going to balance everything out. I don't think there's a good or bad way to do it, but it definitely do something that's going to ensure that your investment for the long term is protected for the long term.
So when you're saying a passive income, so then just for folks listening, you're talking about like get a rental property, maybe put 20-25% down. Your payments are $400 for the mortgage that you now carry.
And then you rent it for $1,000, and you have additional $600 in revenue coming into your pocket, not taxes, revenue. Actual revenue,
right.
and use that $600 to take care of the things to better your income level, but also use that to better your opportunities down the road. So you could use it in that respect. So it's always a good thing. Yeah,
but also the appreciation factor. Of course, these days it's a little bit slow right now. However, you know, usually when you buy, I shouldn't say usually, you know,
typically
though. Especially in the old days, I mean, I've had a lot of real estate developers over the years as a CPA, and the ones that seem to do the best are the ones that had a strategic plan of long-term holding.
And, absolutely.
And they'll go, you know, real estate will increase at, you know, certain dips over time like we're seeing now. However, in the long run, right, Terry, I mean, usually is on the upward trend.
Absolutely. This was a major correction.
Yeah.
Nobody called for 70-80% reductions in price. I mean, there were people I knew had planned for 20-30%, which I thought was incredibly conservative.
Right.
There was no way to call a 70 or 80. It got everybody off guard.
Yeah.
I mean, the only ones that didn't get hurt are people that just sat out and said, you know, they ended up being the smart ones. They just said, hey, this is getting too ridiculous. When 2004, 2005, 2006 and part of 2007 when we were, I mean, I'm buying just right now. I mean, case in point, I'm buying nice fourplexes for $100,000 at the height of the market. In worse shape, we're selling for $450,000.
Wow.
In worse shape.
Right.
So the ones I'm getting are in better shape now because there's been some work done to them. The rents are comparable. and you're getting it for 25 cents on the dollar, your cash flow is great.
Yeah,
and
that's
it will
definitely
go up.
A pension there.
And it will go up. All right. So let's say it only goes up 5%. Or in Phoenix, let's say 10, which is a conservative number in Phoenix. That's a nice, you buy it for 100, now you got 110, then you get, 121, and that's not bad for a couple of years.
But, you know,
and
even,
cash flow.
I was just going to say that,
benefits.
Terry, even if that went up 3%.
Yeah, you'd still
3%,
do
3%, you're already cash flowing it every month.
And rents are going to go up. Rents are bottomed now. They're stable. They will go up. They took such a decrease. All that's going to happen is when things get tight, case in point, like a two-bedroom, one-bath, an average used to be $650 a month. Now the average is $550 a month. We probably will get up to $650. I don't think we'll go over it, but we will get close to it, and that's going to increase your cash flow next 3 to 5 years pretty high.
You know what? And here's a nugget on that, since we're talking about fourplexes and cash flow. I don't think a lot of people listening realize that you can buy a fourplex, and if you live in it, it's a primary residence. You don't need 25% down on that property. That's a primary residence purchase. You know, that's a 5 or 10% down. Actually, if you're a veteran or FHA even. Yeah. So let's start with FHA. Okay, so if you get an FHA loan with 3.5% down on a fourplex. So now you're buying a fourplex, you move in it, you've got three of them rented. It's more than paying the mortgage payment for you. If you're a veteran, you get 100% financing. So you put no money down, you know, get whatever money you brought to the transaction, your earnest money, your appraisal money, all back at the table at closing. And now you move into a fourplex and you've got cash flow. You have a pension the day you close on your fourplex.
So great opportunities are what
awesome
you're saying.
Awesome opportunities.
I think for young people, that's the avenue they should take.
Huge. Yeah, buy a duplex even. Yeah. Even if, you know, if you're afraid of getting too many renters, get a duplex. I mean, you can't manage one person. You're buying it. You already qualify for the mortgage. That means you can make the payment, the whole payment. You're making the payment for the whole duplex. So then if all of a sudden, you have a renter who's late or bails
still
on
covered,
you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
So a great opportunity. It's so good. It's so bad, it's still good out there. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the real estate panel, starring Terry Cass and Chris Gray. Special in-studio guest is George Grosso, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, certified financial planner and certified divorce financial analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, certified financial planner, 602-235-0336.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel, the fourth Tuesday of every month from 3 to 4. Good drive time, all you people out there on the freeway. Drive carefully, of course, and enjoy our political commentary. And that was, we're usually not too political, are we, Chris?
No, I'm not a really political person.
Oh, yeah, you did say that in the beginning.
Neither am I.
Oh, yeah, right. I know Terry is. Anyway, Terry, off there, you were talking about an interesting statistic. In Arizona, the percentage of houses underwater, let's
55%. Go for that. This morning, Arizona Republic, I think put out by ASU School of Real Estate, 55% of homes in Phoenix are underwater.
Mm. I thought it was raining in, like, one of the Dakotas.
What?
Like I said, I'm not political. That was a joke.
So we're one of three locations.
Well, we're number three. Number two is Sacramento.
Vegas. Oh, Sacramento.
Stockton or Sacramento. Number one is Vegas. Oh. Vegas is 65% of all homes are underwater. Now, in New York, they have the biggest dollar spread of being underwater, but believe it or not, only 6% of homes in New York State are underwater.
That's amazing. Why is
6%?
That?
6%. Their values held. Washington, a lot of eastern cities just didn't get
heavily
hit.
Heavily populated area in New York. I'm from New York originally. Tell you that the people that have their houses, even though they've appreciated in value, and even if they take a small hit on equity, there's no place to go. I mean, I've got family that originally bought their houses for like maybe 180, 200, and when everything was booming, their houses were like 650. And I ask them, "Well, what's going on?" It's like, "Where are we going to go? There's no place to go." So people stay in their homes, and they haven't refinanced. The percentages that dropped are probably the people that did refinance, and you know, it's just a heavily populated area. There's not a lot of supply there.
I was just checking my emails. Not sure if the numbers are exact, but I think as of right now, 35,000 homes in the Phoenix area. In Arizona are in active foreclosure right now, meaning they're in their 90-day period.
Oh, wow.
Which is not that's not bad. It used to be 50,000 and 60,000.
Right.
It's almost halved. And it's been going down every month. It said that 11,000 bank-owned properties are in escrow. So that means a serious amount of the when they do go to bank-owned are getting in contract. It didn't show me the amount of listings. This was just from a title company that updates me every day.
So you know, I did notice, too, that I recently it's kind of like a roller coaster because you take a bunch of loan apps, and everybody's shopping to get a house. And then all of a sudden, all at once, it seems to hit, you know, and you get several contracts in. And I have noticed that, you know, I have been inundated with a lot of accepted contracts lately. So there's a lot of people that, you know, on the REO, because the REOs take a little bit longer to get the contracts accepted in the short sale,
right.
You know, all this and that. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing an increase in accepted, you know,
that's good.
Contracts.
How about percentage of loans you're closing that are submitted?
You know,
if they're turned down, why?
Almost, it seems like everything right now at this point is getting what's called a suspense. So they turn it down and say, get me these 25 items. You're like, holy mackerel, because you thought you had everything. But if you can believe it, there's 25 silly things. And it's maybe, it's somehow or other in the scan, they missed a page of something or other.
But are you closing? I mean,
but we're still closing them. Yeah,
let's say you get 10 loans in. Are you closing 10? Are you only closing 9, 8? What's your percentage of actual loans from, you know, application all the way into close of escrow?
Probably 8 or 9. Reason,
that's good.
Yeah, and and I don't typically take a complete loan app if in the pre-qual I don't feel I can get the person a loan. There's no point in going any further. But sometimes what will happen is the process is taking so long for, like, when people make an offer on a short sale or an REO, you know, so finally, first of all, they look for a couple of months, and you're trying to keep everything updated. But at the same time, you don't want to keep pulling their credit because their credit scores will drop because lending's going to pull their credit at the at funding or prior to docs anyway. So it's taking a long period of time so that people's lives change. All of a sudden, they start a different job. All of a sudden, they're on maternity leave. you know, one thing or another. Something changes in their life to where now, okay, well, we can't do that. Like, so I close all my transactions, but like, for instance, I have a client now. I'm like, well, guess what? They shopped for months and months, and then they finally landed a property, and it took for a couple of months or something like that to get it accepted. Well, guess what? It took so long that she was on maternity leave by the time they landed the property, and now underwriting's like, you know what? We want a pay stub with her back in action. Even though I have a letter from the lender, from her company saying she's on maternity leave, she's going to be back at full pay when she comes, and she gets paid this much while she's on maternity leave. But so, yeah, now it's not going to close at the moment. Now she's got to be back to work. But, you know, not, you know, as far as fault, it's not really like anybody's fault. But you know what? If you do a good prequal, you can close all of the transactions, provided things don't take, you know, a year to get to the table, because something's going to change. But anyway.
Wow. So you're seeing a lot of action.
Yeah. I get at least a prequal every single day. You know, typically one or two every single day, a prequal. So I'm getting a loan app probably about every 3 days. Everybody wants to buy right now. The only people not wanting to buy are the people who can't. So, I mean, really everybody wants to buy as far as what it seems like.
Which makes sense, right, Barry? I mean, it's a great opportunity to buy. Now, a couple – I guess we maybe have 4 minutes left or so, maybe 3 minutes left. Wow. So let's talk real quickly because off of what you – something you said, Terry, about 55% of the Arizona houses, I guess you said, are underwater. Yeah. What are some of the solutions? So we'll have to go pretty quickly around the panel, but solutions from a financial planning standpoint as well as from Terry and Chris. Let's start with Terry. So real quick solutions if you find yourself underwater, which you probably will.
Well, if you can afford the payment, don't do anything.
Right.
I mean, wait it out. I mean, you still have to have a place to live. Current, if you can't make the payment, I always suggest call the lender. See if there's any sort of loan modification help. You know, that's your absolute first step no matter what. If you are not getting help by the lender, then I always say call a lawyer, call a CPA, an accountant, find out ramifications of a short sale, which to me is the best avenue, the least hit on you if you absolutely are going to get out of the house and approach a realtor if that's what you want to do, and get your house short sold.
Makes sense. George?
Well, in regards to foreclosures and things of that nature, like this isn't a market where, you know, we've never seen anything like this. And from a foreclosure standpoint, a lot of the foreclosures that have happened were due to people becoming sick or hurt and unable to go back to work. And it resulted in a loss of income. And that's something that when you talk to a financial advisor, they can go ahead and go through with you to see how to better protect your income revenue and also protect the investment. You know, mortgage protection, another very important key here is if something even worse happens to a family, that's something you should talk to a financial advisor about, because we can help you plan for those contingencies while you're enjoying today, protect for tomorrow.
I agree.
Chris.
I was going to say, and that's the thing a lot of people didn't think of when they were buying houses, you know, for the longest time. I mean, a lot of people used to get mortgage protection. You know, everybody thinks their mortgage insurance is protection for them. And that mortgage insurance is actually protecting the lender, not you, which is right now with the foreclosures and whatnot, where the lenders are getting, you know, some of their money back is from the mortgage insurance that they had on you. Not, you know, so anyway, so I think a little bit of what George is talking about is, you know, some sort of insurance or umbrella thing to protect you in the event sick or disabled or whatever, your assets are protected. But the other thing too, in the short sale, don't forget, you know, in applying for a short sale, try to continue to make that payment, because if you're not late, you can still get a loan.
Excellent. Give out contact information. Chris Gray, you go first.
My name is Christopher Graham with American Financial Lending. You can reach me at 602-332-3414. 332-3414.
Excellent. No, that's okay. Terry Cass.
Caston Long Commercial Group, 602-703-5277.
And George, our guest in studio.
George Grosso, financial services professional here in Scottsdale and Phoenix. My contact number is going to be 602-574-5854. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you all. We'll see you all next month, fourth Tuesday, 3 to 4. Stay tuned, of course, tomorrow, Breakthrough Sports. A lot of special guests. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great evening.